Our world has become complex and disruptive, and leading teams and organizations takes courage, determination, and skill. This podcast connects you to some of the great leaders to find out just how they do it. You're listening to Russell Boyce and Daryl Crook in conversation with standout leadership in a world of disruption.
Welcome to our podcast, and a very big welcome to our guest today, Leanne Haywood, OAM. Leanne is a professional non-executive director on a number of local and national and international boards, including ASX-listed companies. Leanne, I'm betting there's some people around the world that are not sure what OAM is all about, and probably maybe not even sure what ASX is all about. So tell us a bit about your story, your journey to from where you started to where you are these days, and do tell us about OAM and how you came to be awarded such an honour. All yours, Leanne.
Okay, there's a lot of questions in that one question, Daryl, but I'll give it my best shot. So I started off my career as a school leaver. I'd done very well in my HSC. I was school captain and ducks of the school in my final year, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. Got lots of encouragement to go to university and do something, and really decided that that wasn't for me. I wanted to know what I wanted to do before I went in that direction. So really took a job with public service to see where I wanted to go. I actually made my decision on my career after I started having children. So I married my teenage sweetheart from Narromine High School, quite young, and we decided on having a family pretty much straight away. Then moved to the Hunter Valley into the mining industry when we realised that he was unable to support the family on the sort of salary he was able to earn in country New South Wales. So a couple of years later, dissatisfied in my public service job, and dissatisfied, I think, from the perspective that the guy next to me could sit with his feet on the desk all day and get paid exactly the same amount of money as me when I was working really hard to do my absolute best. So I was looking for something that I'd be rewarded for my efforts. Decided on accounting, being in the mining area, decided on mining, and that's the start of the story, the start of a 25-year career. Executive career in the mining industry, which culminated in a CFO role with Northparkes Mines, and then as an international marketing role with Rio Tinto, where I worked in Mongolia and China for 5 years, doing a weekday commute from Australia. I took a redundancy from Rio Tinto when they requested that I move to Singapore. Clearly, with a husband who's a farmer, a move to Singapore just wasn't going to work. I couldn't imagine him being in an apartment with a tomato plant on the front veranda and being the least bit happy about that. So we did consider that I would do a commute to Singapore, but just decided that that wasn't the right direction for me after 5 years in the role, that I would take the redundancy and take my chances on what came next. What came next was the start of my non-executive director career, and my first role was I got a non-executive director role with a lithium miner with mines in Argentina. So I was pretty happy with my first non-executive director role. Took it fairly steady then to move into a full-time portfolio of directorships, and that was 2016. I took on my first directorship, moved into a full portfolio in 2019. So I'm now on four ASX boards across lithium, aircraft parts manufacture, forestry, and cloud communications. I'm also on the board of Snowy Hydro, and I'm on the council of Charles Sturt University. So quite a full portfolio and a very varied and interesting one. I think the question about the OAM, which is the Medal of the Order of Australia, is quite an interesting one. When I took the redundancy from Rio Tinto, I wasn't very good at being unemployed, and absolutely convinced myself that my career was over, that I had no future. that I would end up working in Woolworths on the checkout to make ends meet. And in fact, decided that I might work in Dan Murphy's because then I'd get 10% off my alcohol. And at the time, that was very, very real to me. And I cried over the washing up and all sorts of things. So I just decided that at my age and you know, with where I was at in my career, there was just no future. All seems ridiculous now, but it was very, very real to me at the time. 4 years later, I got the New South Wales Businesswoman of the Year Award for my work with women, particularly women in leadership in the mining industry. So I had a passion, have a passion for helping young women succeed. And that's what I was awarded the Businesswoman of the Year Award. And as a flow on from that, I was awarded the Medal of the Order of Australia for my services to businesses across a range of industries. An incredible honour. I felt like a queen for the day.
Wow, what a journey. What an absolute journey. And, you know, again, for those international listeners, Leanne, who you talk about places where you live and places where you work, where's home for you? For our folks around the world, is it close to a major city? Is it in outback Australia? Give us a bit of a picture of what home looks like.
Well, people from Sydney think that I'm in outback Australia, but people around where I live know that I'm not in outback Australia. I'm about 500 kilometres west of Sydney on an 800-hectare rural property, which is a functioning rural property. My husband is a farmer. That's his career. I am an hour from my grocery store. I'm an hour from my nearest airport, and that airport is an hour's flight from Sydney. So that's where I live. We are, our children to go to school when we first moved here used to ride their motorbikes to the river, row across the river, and jump into an old Jeep to drive to the bus and then sit on the bus for an hour. So that's where we live.
People listening in would say, no, surely not. This is really only in the movies, but here it is. And the amazing part, Leanne, is here is someone with such a great leadership story to tell, and someone who now is working as a professional director. And I imagine commuting a fair bit, not just around Australia, but internationally for whatever that means, and yet still being able to hold, let's call it, the values of living where you live and being able to juggle those two. That's quite a feat, I imagine.
I guess it does look that way from the outside, but I guess for me, it's just what I do. So I came to something of a crisis point when I had been at manager level at North Parks Mines, which is about 50 kilometres from where we currently live, had been at manager level for about 5 years and was starting to look for my next career move. And realised that I wasn't going to be able to move if I wanted to stay with my husband, which I did. So I really set about thinking about what that might look like and looked at the sort of roles within Rio Tinto, because I love the mining industry. It's been my passion in my executive career. Looked at the sort of roles within Rio Tinto that I might be able to do on a remote or commute basis, and really set about talking to people and promoting myself to be considered for those roles, and got knocked back many times. Sorry, you need to live in Salt Lake City. Sorry, you need to live in London. We can't work that way. And then finally came across someone who was probably about 10 years ahead of his time who said, I'm really happy if you live in Australia and do this job. You've got the experience we need. So I commuted internationally every week for 5 years to do the international marketing role for Rio Tinto, marketing the Oyu Tolgoi copper concentrate into China. Some people might suggest that that's not a great life balance, but for us, it was perfect life balance because my husband was doing exactly what he wanted to do. And I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. And we just made sure that when we were together, we were together. So mobile phone gets switched off, laptop gets switched off, farm gets switched off. Not that the farm can be really switched off, but hubby would pick me up at the airport and we'd go and have lunch together. And then the weekend would be ours until I jumped on the plane again.
Leanne, I'm hearing a lot of, I'm getting a huge sense of the values that Daryl mentioned a moment ago, the values that seep into building culture, which is so important, far more important than anything else in a leadership role. And you mentioned you won that OAM for the work that you did in promoting young women in leadership or building leadership capabilities in young women. And the values conversation comes into that as well. I would be really, really keen to hear you tease out a little bit more about that young women in leadership role. How did you go about that? What were the sorts of things that you focused on? Can you give an example without any names? Successes, challenges, how did that work?
So I think I'll start with the why. The why was that I really did it tough in the mining industry. As one woman on a mine site of 300 men, the first woman to be promoted to commercial manager of an underground mine site in the Hunter Valley, my boss was congratulated on being brave enough to appoint a woman. When I left that role, I was given washing up gloves and washing up detergent and told to get back in the kitchen where I belonged by the HR manager. So there was lots and lots of challenges in my early and mid-career around being a woman in a male-dominated industry. And I wanted to make it easier for the women who followed me. I had followed women in the days where women climbed the ladder and then pulled it up after them, and I was determined not to be that woman. I wanted to nurture other young women. Happy to coach men as well, but I have a passion for it to be women because we need more women in leadership. So how did I go about that? I always volunteered for mentoring programs. So as I became more senior, I was asked to mentor people, and I would volunteer to mentor young female leaders. If I worked with women, I would have informal mentoring relationships with them. And it's really developed from there. I chaired the Women on Boards ASX program last year, which is a peer-to-peer program to encourage women onto ASX boards. So we had 13 women. I was the chair. I ran an 8-month program to help them get all the tools they needed to get on to ASX boards. And we had incredible success. So I think we had 3 women on ASX boards by the end of the program, 3 of the 13. And the target for the program is 20% on ASX boards within 2 years of the program completing. So I believe I was the most successful chair to date, unless there's been a more successful one since me. The other measure of success is, so for example, the references that I got for the New South Wales Businesswoman of the Year Award from previous mentees were humbling, talking about the impact that I'd had on their lives and their careers and others' lives and careers. So my measure of success is that thank you or seeing someone succeed. And I've seen that happen.
When you touch somebody's life, it's a special thing.
Leanne, there's a passion there that we need to see more of across all sectors and across all businesses across the globe. And I congratulate that passion to you. We need to see it more, not just talked about, but actually done. So thank you. Tell me, Leanne, that shift from senior executive working in the business, as it were, to professional director, in a governing role of a business. Talk to our listeners about the shift in attitude, the shift in mindset, the shift in leadership style. What had to change for you as you moved from executive in the business to a director of the business?
I think there's two aspects to that, Daryl. The first one is everybody who moves into a non-exec director role talks about the challenge of, you know, fingers out and noses in when you're a non-exec director rather than, you know, getting your fingers in the pie. I didn't really struggle with that, and partly because when I was a senior executive, I was accused by my bosses of not being into the detail enough. So I had a great deal of trust in the people who worked for me, and I expected them to keep me in the loop and keep me informed if things were looking like they were going wrong and allow me to help them if they needed help. But I certainly didn't get into the detail and tell them how to do their job. And that was criticised by some of my bosses, but it meant that I was very ready for the transition into non-executive directorship. Having said that, my first directorship was a challenge because it was all I was doing. And so having been unemployed for a little under 12 months and suddenly back in the business again, it was, and I knew there was all this stuff going on in the company that I could fix if I could get my hands around it. I had to really stop and sit back and say, that's not my job anymore. I need to guide and I need to monitor and I need to manage, but I cannot do because then I'm not doing my job. So it was challenging until I took on an executive role the following May, and then I was too busy to be wanting to get my fingers in the pie. So I was doing an executive role and a board role at the same time.
It's interesting, Leanne, hearing you talk about that challenge and your style, which is also my style, to trust the people who work for you. That was Shackleton's style as well. If you read the leadership literature on him, one of his approaches was to find good people and equip them as best you could and then get out of their way. And it really works.
I agree. Good people make you look good.
That too.
But Leanne, we've got up-and-coming leaders listening into this podcast today, and they're listening to your journey. Now, I have the pleasure. I can see you on screen as I'm talking to you, and I can see the passion on your face. I can see your eyes light up when you talk, and I can see that smile when you look back on your own journey. One of the things I was hearing you say there is, you know, that anxiety, let's call it, or uncertainty, pick a word, of being unemployed at that point in time. And I think in the current climate that we have around the world, there are middle level leaders who are wondering what might happen if things change for them. Can you just give us a minute or two again on that? The courage, the commitment, the determination, the belief in self that is required through those times in your career?
Yeah, look, it was an incredibly difficult period. And I think the first thing that I did when I knew I was going to take the redundancy was I went to the doctor and I got a mental health plan because I knew I wasn't going to cope well with being unemployed. And I didn't want to find myself in a hole so deep I couldn't dig myself out of it. So I figured I would get the right support right from the start to help me on that journey. And that was a really good decision. My psychologist really, you know, I'd go into her one fortnight having had a really good fortnight on the job search and got lots of responses and I'd be high as a kite. And I'd go in the next fortnight in tears because I'd got a knockback. And she said to me, it was quite profound. She said, so tell me, Leanne, what has changed about you as a person between last fortnight and this fortnight on the basis of feedback from people who don't know you?
Brilliant.
And so that was pretty profound. And that helped me to learn just to take the feedback for what it was. The feedback is from people who do not know me. So let it flip over your shoulder and get on with it. The biggest thing for me was treating the job search like a job. So our outplacement consultants said you should be spending around 25 hours a week on this. So they were suggesting sort of 5 hours a day. Because I live an hour from the nearest anywhere, I did 3 days a week so I could have 2 days where I could actually do something else. But that was my target, was 3 days a week. I did it really well. I did it in an organized fashion. I had spreadsheets galore about who I'd contacted and what their response was and when I was going to contact them next. And it reaped its rewards, not only through the job search, but beyond in the board search. So, you know, 5 years down the track, I got a call from someone I hadn't heard from since I first made contact with them to say, what are you up to now? I've got a board role. So I'm still getting traction from all of the work I did back in 2015, 2016. And that's kind of the advice that I give to people who I talk to are looking for board careers. It's hard work. You've got to work really hard at it. It's not just something that falls, you know, off the back of a bus into your lap.
So, Leanne, you're on boards now. You're on quite a few of them. The title of this podcast is Leadership in a Disruptive World. And the thing about disruption is it's a frequently occurring threat to organizations, and the frequency gets faster and faster, and the intensity is often higher and higher. Now that you're on boards, you're not in that executive role. You can't respond to a disruption or a threat by just getting in and as you say, getting your hands in the pie. You've got to be a little bit more aloof and a little bit more, you know, playing a steady the ship role. What does it look like for you and for boards in general when disruption hits and you have to provide the board level leadership? How do you deal with that?
Well, I think one of the key roles of a non-exec director is to look over the horizon as much as possible. So looking for that disruption, looking for that potential disruption and making sure that you have the conversations in the boardroom around what that might look like and what a response might look like. Just as in my executive career, I wasn't inclined to tell people what to do. It is about saying, this is a threat. Can we talk about how you might react? Can you tell us when you can come back to us on this? So in my style, it's about gentle insistence. So, for example, we can see this is likely to occur. We can't ignore it. Can you tell me when you can be back to me with a response? So it falls entirely in their court, but also they know that it's not something they can avoid.
So you're talking about providing, in fact, disruptive thinking in the boardroom. And I think that's a rather unusual thing, particularly for Australian boardrooms who worry about strategy to build the success of the company and caring about compliance, but not really thinking in disruptive ways. So is there an appetite? Do you think there's an appetite in boardrooms, or indeed a need for disruptive thinking to be part of the skills matrix of board directors?
Yes, absolutely. So it is absolutely the role of the executive and leadership team to be looking for disruption and how they may react to it. But the board has the luxury of not being mired in the day-to-day. So we have the luxury of taking the time to consider what might be coming at us. And I think we need to stop thinking about disruption. I'm not suggesting you're thinking about it this way, but a lot of people think about disruption like the newcomer on the block, the new company that's going to come in and take half your business away, the new product that's going to come in and supersede your product. I think of disruption in a much more general way than that. And a good example is I'm on the board of a cloud communications company. And in the first half of last year, we were really struggling with recruitment. We were struggling to get people. It's a tech company. We were struggling to get people, and salaries were escalating at a phenomenal rate. And then in the latter half of the year, we started to get news from the US that the big tech companies were laying off tens of thousands of people. And it's tempting as a board and as an organization to sit back and say, thank heavens for that. We will no longer have recruitment issues. We can stop this salary escalation that's been worrying us. But then you have to look beyond that and say, okay, but what does this mean? Those tech companies are actually part of our customer base. So if they're hauling back, what does that mean for our demand? What does that mean for our company? What sort of disruption is this going to cause to our organization? So it's that sort of thinking, looking beyond the immediate and the obvious and saying, okay, but what else?
Leanne, I'm going to ask you an interesting question here, and I'm going to ask you, the focus of this question is around negative leadership, poor examples of leadership, bad leadership. I guess in all of our careers, we can point to people that we've worked for or with over the years and say, there's an example of poor leadership and so forth. Broadly, if you were to try to almost theme these things up, are there some classic themes that you've discovered over the years that hang around this poor leadership? Are there patterns where you say, one of the patterns I see a lot is this, that really has a negative impact? Are there any of those patterns that come to mind?
I think I'll circle back to something Russell said about hiring good people. When you see people hiring people in their own image, or hiring people who are not going to challenge them, then I know I'm looking at a poor leader. I look out for bullying behavior, having worked for a bully for a few years and suffered the consequences. I am very alert to bullying behavior and wouldn't go near it with a 40-foot pole. If I came across it, I would do something about it. So I do not tolerate bullying behavior. And, of course, the other one is micromanaging. So they're the kind of three themes, I suppose, that I've come across in terms of poor leadership that have really impacted on me in my roles and on others, of course.
Absolutely. That bullying behaviour comes in many forms, doesn't it, these days? And I think that concept has broadened out a lot when we look at the different types and forms that we can see. And the issue of micromanaging, I guess moving from an executive to a professional board member, as I work with boards, Leanne, I often see that kind of micromanaging from boards, and it occurs to me that it's broadly speaking perhaps one of three reasons. Either they haven't been trained properly as a board member, they don't know what their role is, or secondly, they don't trust the executive well enough, and so they're constantly getting involved, and it's a trust issue. Or thirdly, a lot of them are perhaps executives themselves in other businesses, and so used to being an executive in a business that they forgot to change hats when they walked into the room. There's a fourth driver I have found, and it is not that they don't know what their job is, and not that they are too busy being an executive, and not that they don't trust the people. They're just really, really interested. And that real interest that they have gets them to lean in just a little too far into the detail. For our listeners who are thinking about perhaps going onto a board themselves out there as they're listening into this podcast, what do you make of that, and what advice perhaps would you give to them?
So I guess I'll talk about an example where, and look, I'm known to be respectfully outspoken on my boards, and I look to retain my newbie eyes for as long as possible, because often when you walk into a new board, you pick up things that people have become complacent about. One of my boards, my first board meeting, I was listening and observing, and then the chair and the deputy chair wanted to chat to me after the board meeting and get my feedback. And I said, in that board meeting, I heard 15 task assignments from different non-executive directors for the CEO that were all due within the next 6 weeks. How can you possibly expect him to do his job and move the business forward in accordance with the strategy you've set? And that started a fabulous conversation about exactly the sorts of things you've talked about, making sure that they understood, the directors understood their role, making sure they were prepared to take their CEO hats off when they walked in the door and be non-executive directors. And it opened for those conversations during board meetings in a respectful manner. I'm not sure that I've answered your question, but you can ask me more if you want to hear more.
Leanne, I might flip the question around completely. There's a danger of board directors leaning in too far. There's also a danger that they don't lean in enough. And one perspective on that is that you as a board director who used to be an executive, who used to interact with a lot of people in the company, with all of the personal touch value that comes from that, as a director, you're somewhat removed from that, and that can be very frustrating. How do you deal with that? How do you remain in contact with the people at a personal level in a way that's adding value to the company?
That's a really fine line to walk. I find it reasonably easy because I'm chair of audit on four of my boards, and that means I have very direct interaction with the CFO, and the CFO generally knows a bunch about the business. But keeping that relationship so keeping that contact as often as it needs to be without getting to the point where you're a nuisance to that poor CFO who's trying to do their job is a real fine balance to walk. And the sort of relationship I try to develop, particularly with my CFOs, is that they will pick up the phone and let me know if there's something on their minds. So no surprises. I'm not going to phone them every week and ask for an update, but I expect an update if there's something they need to tell me. Otherwise, it might be contact at each board meeting, contact in between if there's something necessary, and then in the lead up to half year and full year accounts, a bit more contact. So it is very important to keep that line, but also really important to have that interaction because directors are responsible for culture of the organisation. You can't know the culture if you don't talk to the people.
Leanne, there are CEOs listening in on this podcast right now. And, you know, if I could just get a little mental telepathy going with some of them, they might be saying, Darryl, can you just, you've got someone who's been an executive who is now on the other side of the fence, as it were. They're a board member. Leanne, what advice would you give to a CEO that would make them a better CEO from a board member's point of view?
Be prepared to use the skills on the board. A lot of CEOs, I think, have been burnt by board members who get their fingers in and micromanage and try and run the show. If you've got the right board, use their skills and engage in conversations, engage in debates, bring them on the journey and see them as team members rather than the policeman that you've got to kind of get the approval of.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said. And that relationship between the CEO particularly and the board is such an important relationship. The trust, the cooperation, the collaboration is critical. Leanne, to our folks, thinking about your key learnings over your journey and perhaps turning those learnings into perhaps some advice to our listeners. You know, if you're going to take this leadership journey, here's some of the major learnings and perhaps some of the things to really be mindful of along that way. So just round that out for our listeners there about learnings and advice.
I think I'll just focus on one thing, I think, Darryl, and that is that at one stage I got leadership feedback from my boss that I cared about my team too much. And it really bothered me because I couldn't understand what I wasn't doing that was causing that to be an issue. I was prepared to take disciplinary action, have difficult conversations with them, all of the things I needed to do as a leader, but I did care about them as people. And I think that's really important. I've never had any detriment to my leadership journey by caring about people. And caring about people can be brought into even the difficult discussions, the difficult conversations. If you really care about someone, then you give them the difficult feedback. So that would be my key, I guess, learning is you need to care about your people if you're going to be a good leader.
I've found in my experience, when you deeply care about them, they know it. And they respond and they start caring about each other as well. And that can often get them through the really difficult situations.
Yeah, agree.
Leanne, it has been an absolute pleasure having a conversation with you today. And on behalf of all of our listeners, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your honesty and your openness. And thank you for your candor. I can see why you are such a successful board member these days, as you clearly are. We greatly appreciate your time. Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks, Darrell, and thanks, Russell.
And thank you for me. It's been a pleasure.